Welcome into the Call-In Podcast, recording on Friday, March 26th, bottom of the 3 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. I apologize for rushing through the intro, but Lebowitz, we got so much to get to. We took a week off there, just free agency had me tied up in the NFL. We got to talk about what's going on in the NFL. We had the NBA trade deadline yesterday. Those aren't even close to my favorite stories on the map right now, and we'll get to that as well. But let's jump right into it. We're going to jump right in with the NBA and the trade deadline that was yesterday, and the Celtics for the first time since we were in college, actually, because I remember exactly where I was when they made their last deadline deal. I was in the Hill Center at Ithaca College when they traded for Isaiah Thomas. That's right. It's been that long. But two deals. They go out. They get Evan Fournier. They spend the TPE, a good chunk of the TPE. They get Evan Fournier for 2 second-round picks. And then they flip Daniel Tice in a three-team deal. They end up with a couple of young centers in Mo Wagner and the other big white—
Luke Kornet.
Luke Kornet, thank you. He looks like he's named Luke Kornet. So your overall impressions, Danny Ainge for weeks said he wasn't going to do anything. He said the TPA was more valuable in the offseason. He said it would be panicking to make a move, and then he made two moves.
Yeah, it's tough to tell what the direction is. And it's tough to even tell if these are moves where it's like, no, we're buying into this season, or if it's just, all right, we got to do something just so it doesn't appear that we're not trying. And maybe this was a deal that was more for like a morale boost than anything. I know a lot of guys like Daniel Tice. He was a favorite in the locker room, but everyone knows on that roster and, you know, in this fan base that the Celtics needed to make a change. And I think Ainge went out and he made a couple moves that, you know, aren't world breakers, but it's definitely better than nothing. And I think with the state of the Celtics as is right now, anything is better than what the Celtics have been dealing with in the past. So I guess I think that it's all right. I think that it's definitely helps the team a little bit. It gives them another option with Fournier, someone you can rely on offensively, which they really haven't been able to do all that much outside of Tatum and Brown, and definitely gives you some more size and more depth with your big men. And it also, you know, makes it so that you're going to have to rely on a guy like Rob Williams. And I'm excited to see what he does with a heightened workload.
And that to me is maybe the most attractive part of all of this is, and Danny Ainge said on Tucker and Rich on 98.5 Friday morning, that Robert Williams is going to play more. So that's huge. I think the worst thing, the only thing worse than not making a move when you should is making a move when you shouldn't, and making a move just for the sake of making a move. And I'm worried now without that TPE, did the Celtics, and all three guys are on expiring contracts they acquired, and we'll touch on that in a bit, did the Celtics take themselves out of the running for a big move this summer? If a guy like Bradley Beal, that's been my guy, if a guy like Bradley Beal becomes available. Now, you can sign and trade Fournier and open up another TPE. I don't know if it's going to be $28.5 million, but you can open up another TPE. But again, you just go back to that trade in November, and I've talked about this on the show before. The Celtics weren't in a position, regardless of what you think of Gordon Hayward, the Celtics were not in a position to just lose Gordon Hayward for nobody. That's what they did. That's a huge part of the reason they're in this hole right now. And essentially what they did with that player to be named later, right, TPE, when they could have maybe had Miles Turner and Doug McDermott, they just traded Gordon Hayward for a worse version of Gordon Hayward. Like, Evan Fournier is a good player. He's about Gordon Hayward, maybe a little worse. And then they lost that. Now, look, you might have lost Gordon Hayward for these 3 months anyway because he gets hurt all the time. That's a very real possibility as well. But this just felt panicky to me by Danny Ainge. And maybe there's a bigger picture thing here somewhere, but it felt panicky. Ainge did say, and this is what really encouraged me when he was on Touch and Rich this morning, that and he in the past has said he doesn't believe in rental deals. He's not a fan of rental deals. He said that they want Fournier to be a part of the team long term, and they want to extend him. And it's easy to say that, you know, before you see the dollar amount, but they have his bird rights now. They can go over the cap to pay him. So we'll see what happens there. And then we'll see what happens with Wagner, too. Ainge said he sees potential there. I think Kornet was just a throw in. But let's see. So the first major check mark for this trade is going to be, do these guys come back next year?
Yeah. But I also think, And that's important. You know, is this just a deal to make a deal? Danny Ainge feeling pressure, you know, is that the motive?
You talked about it as, you know, kind of being a shot in the arm. And Ainge kind of said the same thing this morning that he thinks, I think he used the word jolt, that mm-hmm. he thinks 40 can give them a jolt. And they need him. They absolutely need scoring off the bench, especially a guard. Like, I'm not going to dispute that. But Lebowitz, this team is 21-23 right now. They're behind the New York Knicks. They are closer to ninth place and out of the playoffs than they are to seventh place. So if you gave up that TPE, and look, on the surface, I'm not going to say they gave up anything more than that. Two picks for Evan Fournier is a freaking steal.
But two second-round picks, right?
Two second-round picks. Thank you. Two firsts would have been a bit much. Two seconds for Evan Fournier is a freaking steal.
Yeah.
But if you're just getting Evan Fournier to try to refloat, there's a little big market tease for what we're going to talk about later, to try to see, this is where my brain's been at for today.
It's been a crazy day, man.
And I actually made the meme of that. We're going to get to all of this.
Yeah.
If you're using Evan Fournier to try to refloat a 21-23 team that looks dead in the water, and that's what you use your TPE on, I don't know about that. If he comes back next year, it's another discussion. But
yeah.
I don't think this team was worth investing. This specific iteration of the Celtics was worth investing in.
So there's a couple things. One, the Celtics, they're better than their record. I know they lack depth. I know that they haven't had a lot of reliable scoring options outside of those two guys. I know that their big men have not been great, and they're probably way too young on their bench. But they're still better than what their record is. They haven't been playing well at all, you know, for what they have. This move makes them a better team. I think that's undeniable. Even getting rid of Tice, this makes them a much better team. And I think this will help them climb a couple spots in the Eastern Conference. Are they the favorites to come out of the East? Obviously not. Are they favorites to even finish in the top four? No, probably not. But this does help a little bit, and I think, you know, what's as important as anything is making sure that the guys like Tatum, guys like Brown, even guys on your bench who are younger, don't get too discouraged this year when, you know, development is still a part of this Celtics organization and the future of this team. So I get the deal. I am with the deal. I think that it was the right thing, both deals. I think that they're both the right things to do. And I do think they'll probably try to extend Fournier, especially with the bird rights. You're not going to have a lot of flexibility outside of that one guy. So there is an argument that Ainge may have pigeonholed himself. And if Fournier doesn't mesh, then yeah, they're kind of screwed. But there's also a bad message it sends to a team when it's like, yeah, you guys are not worth it at all. Because they're young. And I think they're, again, they're much better than how they've been playing. So I'm looking forward to see how Fournier does mesh. I'm looking forward to see Wagner and you know, how he fits in, and again, how Robert Williams does. But for me, this entire year, I think part of the problem, and this is a little off topic, but they've tuned out a guy in Brad Stevens who might have overstayed his welcome, and maybe they need a change there as well. Either way, I'd rather see this than nothing. I really would. Even with the TPE out the door, for the most part, I'd rather see this than nothing. And I think this will help make the Celtics a little bit more watchable for the rest of the season.
I guess to me, them making, and I know this isn't how Danny looks at it, but this is just how I as a fan view it. It's a kick to the groin for all the years they didn't make a deal. Like, this is the team you invest in, Danny, not the Isaiah Thomas teams. Not the Kyrie Irving teams, not last year. And obviously we know what ultimately happened last year, but not last year when that team was a freaking wagon going down the stretch before it got shut down by COVID. This is the team that's worth investing in. Somebody pulled up a stat. I mentioned how long it's been since the Celtics made a deadline deal. The last time they made a deadline deal was also the last time they were under 500 at the deadline. So why is Danny only investing in bad teams? Why isn't it like that's, I don't know. Tell me, is that irrational? Maybe that's irrational.
I think the biggest thing that I look back on that you mentioned that makes me scratch my head and frustrates me as someone who wants, you know, the Celtics to do well is the handling of the Gordon Hayward situation. If he had, you know, worked with Indiana and made that deal happen, and it'll be Miles Turner instead of Tristan Thompson, and you'd also have Doug McDermott, who would add, you know, an edge offensively. I don't think they're in this position right now. I don't think they need to make a deal to get an Evan Fournier. And I think this team is above 500 and you know, not on the bubble, the playoff bubble.
Well, even going back last year at the deadline, if you know Gordon's not coming back and he wasn't playing well.
Yeah.
Dealing him last year at the deadline to get some help. Like, that's, I don't know, that's where I'm coming at it from. And we'll see what they do. I really liked Wagner in the draft the year he came out. He's struggled in the NBA since, but I think he has upside. He actually went 2 picks before Robert Williams. And then I'm curious what they're going to do with the buyout market. Supposedly they're in on Andre Drummond, which would be interesting.
Yeah.
And probably bumps Robert Williams back, but they could use a guy like that. I think this team is maybe a little beyond what's out there right now for them to fix. I think it needs to be done in the offseason. I think they've limited themselves for the offseason.
And one more thing to consider. Yep. You look at the deals that Ainge has made over the past few years. A lot of them have gone as poorly as possible. They just went completely awry. Whether it's, you know, Gordon Hayward not working out, getting hurt first game in, and just never being the same for the Celtics. Kyrie Irving, we all know what happened there. There's a lot of these big deals in which they trade away or they deal – Kemba Walker, another one, in which they either sign a guy for big money or trade away, you know, very valuable assets, and it comes back and bites them in the ass, and they end up, you know, just, again, going as poorly as it possibly could have. I think there's probably a part of this, and this is already something Danny Ainge had a problem with in the first place, giving up a lot to get something that might be worth it. I think there's a part of Ainge where, you know, he's just like, I don't want to – make a move that's too risky that's gonna just end up blowing up in my face like all these other ones.
You think he's a little gun shy?
I think there might be a factor here of yeah, being gun shy and him not wanting to make a risky move that's gonna end up just setting the Celtics back even further.
I don't think he did something that really risked setting them back further. Again, they maybe are a little less competitive now this summer, but you're right. I don't know. It wasn't, I don't want to say it was one step forward, two steps back. It was, I don't know, half a step forward, half a step back kind of to me. I think they're still more or less in the same place. But no more second round picks, I guess, to clog up the roster. So there's that. One other quick NBA, or did you have anything else on the Celtics, Lovitz?
No, that's it.
Okay, so one other deadline thought before we get into the football stuff. This trade blew my mind yesterday talking about deals Danny Ainge should have made that he never did. Avery, and I know there's other elements at play here, but basically Victor Oladipo, good player, got dealt for Avery Bradley, one of my favorite Celtics of all time, a guy I think is criminally underrated, and Kelly Olynyk, my least favorite Celtic of all time, who's criminally overrated. And I know there's very little consequence kind of all around here with that, but oh, did my brain explode with that one.
Yeah, that made, I mean, I don't know if was Ainge even in on that. Did he? You know,
he wasn't. Diligence? It's just there's a bunch of Celtics names in there, and I don't like Kelly Olynyk. I don't like hearing his name. And then next to Avery Bradley, who I still like, it's like, just why is Kelly Olynyk still in the NBA? What exactly does he do?
He spreads the floor. Come on.
The clinic.
that trade was surprising. I mean, great move for the Heat, but you see a lot of these moves, and that's another head scratch for just the fact that, you know, the Celtics don't get in on these, and, you know, Evan Fournier is fine.
No, I am totally fine with them not getting in on getting Kelly Olynyk back.
Not Olynyk, I'm talking about Victor Oladipo. Price, maybe they could have made something.
I feel like their equivalent of Bradley's probably Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart, you're right. Yeah.
I don't think that's worth it.
Which another, like, people think that Marcus Smart should be untradeable, which I don't understand that.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I'm trying to think if they were to make that deal. I mean, their Olynyk equivalent is probably Tristan Thompson, maybe Tice.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably Tice because you probably got to go lower at the guard because they don't have an Avery Bradley. It's either Marcus Smart who's better, or I mean maybe Peyton Pritchard, but I don't know that I'm moving Peyton Pritchard in that deal again. I just, you know, that Oladipo's a rental. I don't think I'm moving Peyton Pritchard for a rental, so I don't know that I'm faulting Danny for not getting involved in that. I will fault him, and I will use the opportunity to remind everybody that he drafted the clinic, Kelly the Clinic Olynyk, over Giannis Antetokounmpo,
mm-hmm.
because he said all he cared about with that pick was getting a decent bench player. I'll bring that up. But I'm not
Giannis faulting. Would have been a decent bench player.
he would have been. Well, that's like when Drew Bledsoe called Tom Brady the worst backup quarterback of all time. Because he didn't understand the whole backup part.
Yeah, that's a funny one.
I think ultimately they're no better off, they're no worse off. I'm glad they didn't move a first, because if they moved a first, because this is the Celtics' luck, what would have happened is they would have missed the playoffs, and that lottery pick would have turned into a top three pick.
Well, every first round pick these days is protected, so they probably still would have been fine.
It would have been like protected top four, and it would have turned into the fifth pick. Yeah. Something like that's just how they work. So I'm not like totally upset with what they did. I just don't really understand why they did it, why they did most of it. So
shake up, baby. They need a shake up. They got
it. You know what? And there's something to be said for a change in scenery and all of that. So maybe it works. And people have kind of been tying Fournier and Thomas together as like the, you know, because they're the last two deals and they're not particularly similar players. But if Fournier can kind of have that same, like Fournier is much better now. I think he's much higher thought of now than Thomas was when the Celtics got him from Phoenix. But if he can have that kind of effect, I think we look back on this as a home run. I don't know that that happens, but it's not, you know, out of the realm of possibility. So,
all right. I still think they should have gotten Isaiah Thomas this year, but
for the last like 3 years, but that's again, we're going in all these branches. Now let's talk some football, Edwards.
Let's.
Before we get into the trades from Friday, because I do want to talk about those, but this is our first show since free agency. I was the one pounding the table for uncharacteristically aggressive for the Patriots. I'll take my victory lap on that. I don't love every signing. Some are better than others. I think some are actually being underrated, too, believe it or not. But the Patriots are, and maybe the quarterback's out the window now with the trades that were made today. But they are a young, future-facing quarterback away from Bill Belichick pitching a masterclass of an offseason, as good as you're going to get.
Yeah, I think you have to be happy with what they've done so far. It started out, and it's funny because it started out, first move, if you remember, Cam Newton re-signed to the Patriots. And I think everyone had the same reaction. Oh, geez, here we go again. We're going to have another, 7-9 season, 8-8 season maybe, and it's going to be more unwatchable football for the New England Patriots. But then after that, first day of legal tampering or whatever they call it, signing after signing after signing. And it's not just like they added on one side of the ball. It's not like they just boosted one position. They became a much more well-rounded football team over the course of free agency so far. And they made a lot of moves that were team-friendly, too. I think the numbers originally came out, and people are like, geez, $14 million for Cam Newton? And it's like, oh, it's a $3.5 million cap hit. That's nothing. And the same thing with Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry, and all these guys. But overall, obviously, there's going to be some deals that maybe too much money was spent, or maybe that's not the guy that they necessarily needed. But you'd rather have those with all the positives that have come with the past couple of weeks. And overall, the Patriots, I think they're back in the conversation for being an AFC East favorite. Some people will think that I'm exaggerating. Some people will think I'm being a homer.
Well, because the quarterback's still just a huge question. And I think it's, I think in the running is fair. I don't think you can call a team without a quarterback a division favorite.
But we all remember what happened with the Broncos back when they had that unbelievable defense and noodle arm Peyton Manning under center. It worked
out. They're certainly set up that way. But remember, that team had their struggles. It's not like that team dominated wire to wire.
No, that's true. But they still, at the end of the day, they were able to fall back on the fact that they had a generational defense. Not saying this New England Patriots defense is going to be generational, but being a top three in the NFL, that's 100% on the table. And so I think that the offense as well will be better. Cam Newton, obviously not the ideal solution for that quarterback position. And call me crazy here, but I do think having 1 year under your belt in this system and a full offseason to work with In addition to all the weapons that they've added on the offensive side of the ball, it's hard not to imagine he'll have a step up this year and just be a far more productive quarterback. And to me, with the defense as good as it is, mainly, I think that that catapults them. That makes them a competitive football team. So I don't think they're done at the quarterback position. I don't know if that means they're going to pick up someone in the draft who might not even start this year, or maybe they go after, you know, a Jimmy G or someone like that. But even if they don't, add to that position, I think that they're a competitive, really good playoff caliber football team.
And we'll get into the quarterback position in a bit. And yeah, I mean, they're competitive. I think that's totally fair. And the other thing I love is they're going to stay competitive. You mentioned those contracts being team friendly, right? And I think, you know, this kind of getting in the weeds here, and I don't know how many people look this deep into it, but all of these deals are heavily backloaded on the salary cap. What the thing though is, and if you missed it last week, Lebowitz, the NFL signed a new TV deal, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, something ridiculous. But the cap's going to spike. The salary cap, it went down this year, and they were in a spot where they were one of the only teams who had money. Not only did they take advantage of that, they set themselves up where when the cap spikes, either in 2022 or 2023, that's when all these backloaded deals are going to kick in. But they were all signed under a sub $200 million cap. That cap could push 250. So they're going to be competitive in free agency now, you know, pending they could make trades or whatever. But in theory, they have financial offseason flexibility for the next 4 to 5 years. And that's huge. Because if you can get that rookie quarterback in, you can just put piece after piece after piece around him. Mm-hmm. And that's the formula right now. That's how the Chiefs did it with Mahomes. That's, you know, the Niners, how they kind of got there with Jimmy. And his extension had been agreed on, but it hadn't quite kicked in yet. It's what Tennessee's doing. They have Tannehill on the cheap deal. That's what a lot of these teams are either doing or trying to deal. Cheap quarterbacks, usually rookies, doesn't have to be. And then you just load up on the talent around him. It's much easier to add because you don't necessarily have to go in and identify that weapon of a quarterback. So, and, go ahead.
Yeah, and also, you mentioned backloaded contracts. Not to mention, these guys, the guys they signed, the vast majority are between the ages of, you know, 25 and 27.
Oh, all, I think they're all under 30, I believe, from the free agency period, not counting Cam. I believe everybody they signed, and Folk. Everybody's under 30.
Yeah. And that's
under
huge.
30 at heart.
He is. His field goal percentage is over 30, which is the important thing. Well over. But and that's huge. Because it seems like these are moves that they made that you look at them, it's like, okay, this makes them immediately good. Like, immediately they are a much better football team than they were last season. But this also sets them up for that 3 to 5, you know, that magic 3 to 5 year window. And you kind of alluded to it. All signs point to them going after a quarterback in the draft. Going to be tough with all the moves that have been made and the fact that, you know, teams are trading up to try to get these guys before they are gone. But so I guess I'm not as confident that they will now than I was even yesterday. But overall, it seems like they're going to try to get some type of young quarterback, a rookie or something along those lines soon to, you know, complete this process. It's obvious Cam Newton's not the guy for the future. I think even he'd acknowledge that. But right now they have
even the most optimistic Cam Newton fan. And we know some. He's 32 years old. He's dealt with a myriad of injuries over the last 2 years. He's on a 1 year deal. Even if he comes out and throws for 4,500 yards and 25 touchdowns, I don't know that I can call him – like, if we're talking about five-year outlook, which when I say long-term plan, I'm talking about the five-year outlook, Cam's not a part of the long-term plan, regardless of how he plays this year. That guy taking the beating he's taken in his career is not playing at a high level to 37. It's just not – that's just how things work. That's just not going to happen. So even if you believe Cam can be the starter this year – and maybe there's something to be said for that. You're probably not going to put a rookie in right away. But even if Cam is the guy this year, they need a long-term option quarterback. How you feel about Cam might depend how aggressive they need to be at getting that guy at least this year, right? But Cam Newton, by no stretch of the imagination, is a long-term option.
Absolutely. And one more thing, because this what's happened this offseason is so unpatriot-like. Belichick's never really gone this route.
Uncharacteristically aggressive, baby.
Exactly. So if he's uncharacteristically aggressive in free agency, I mean, logic would indicate that he'd be more willing to be uncharacteristically aggressive in the draft. Which is why I think that there's a good possibility that deals are made that, you know, even moving up, which has never been a Patriot thing, is on the table, especially with this draft class, especially in that first round, so heavy in quarterback. So we'll see what happens. But this seems like a new era officially. Like last year was the mediary period, like the in-between time where you're getting over the Tom Brady era in New England. Now it seems like we're full throttle. There's no pandemic. There's no shortened off season. There's no opting out because of COVID. Like, this is it. This is really where you'll be able to judge Bill Belichick post Tom Brady. And so far, I mean, I don't know how you couldn't be happy with the results.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to the quarterback, and that's where kind of today's moves kick in. And you have San Francisco, so, you know, people listen to this late, maybe didn't catch it. San Francisco, who also supposedly wants a quarterback, moves up from 12 to 3 with Miami. They flop with Miami. Miami then moves back up from 12 to 6 with Philly. And that is that sixth pick. We've all thought, you know, this team the Patriots have built, the two tight ends, the kind of wide receivers they have, the offensive line, just made a ton of sense for Trey Lance. And the consensus has kind of been, if you can get to six, if you can trade up to six, you should have a shot at Trey Lance, especially if the Dolphins stay on the board at 3. Well, now the Dolphins are off the board at 3. You have a quarterback needy team there, and you have a team that Miami's not trading out of 6. If they were going to, they would have just stayed at 12 after flipping with San Francisco. They have, whether it's Kyle Pitts, Jamar Chase, Devonta Smith, they have somebody they want at 6. So now all of a sudden you're looking at, basically, if the Patriots want to trade up for a quarterback, do you give up an absolute haul to get to 4 and end up with the guy nobody else wanted, right? You're letting the other three teams choose for you. You might not get your pick of Fields or Lance or Wilson or Mack. You're going to get whoever's left. You'll get one of two. You'll get a chance choice between one of two guys. There's 5 top quarterbacks. You'll get the 3 are going to be gone. Do you pay a ton to move up to 4 and do that? Or do you still give up a pretty sizable price? You're probably talking about 2 firsts and a second, maybe 2 firsts, 2 seconds to go up to 7 with Detroit and grab whoever's left, which is probably Mac Jones at 7 and overpay for Mac Jones. And it might be more than that because you're going to have some serious bidders moving up to 7 between Carolina and Denver. All of a sudden, it looks a lot harder for the Patriots to go up and get a quarterback, which is why I wonder, do they move out of 15, pick up a future first, and then have the ammo to move up next year when they need to move up and go and get one of the quarterbacks in the class of 2022?
Well, there's obviously
I just threw a lot at you there. You want to catch your breath?
No. There's a lot of different ways that this can go. And obviously, one thing you didn't mention, San Francisco moving up to that number 3 pick indicates that Jimmy Garoppolo is obviously not.
I figured we'd do that after we talked about the rookies. Okay, but if that's your take, if you want to get into that, like, hit it, go for it.
I mean, that's kind of where I see this going. To me, it seems like there's one suitor for Jimmy Garoppolo right now, given all the facts you just laid out, and that's the New England Patriots. And obviously the 49ers, they've indicated that they want to keep Garoppolo, which they might. Maybe they want to go the route that a lot of teams have gone over the past few years, and that's draft the quarterback early and have him sit on the bench and don't rush him into a system before it's too late. Is Garoppolo going to want to be a part of that type of deal? I'd imagine no, and if he doesn't want to be, he'll probably voice, you know, his desire to leave San Francisco, you know, if that's the case. And that seems like a likely, you know, scenario. The Patriots trading for Jimmy Garoppolo, which you kind of mentioned, it would be cheaper, in my opinion, than trading up to get a Mac Jones or, a Trey Lance or one of these guys who we don't really know how they're going to do in the NFL.
There's other, and we can get into these in a minute. There's other costs related to trading for Jimmy Garoppolo. And that that's his $27 million a year cap hit over the next 2 years.
Sure. But they, what we've seen them do with you know, players that they've signed this offseason, they mess with the numbers. I'm not a cap guy. I'm not, you know, I don't run the Patriots cap space account, which is wonderfully done, by the way.
He does a great job. So wait, so let's go back to the rookies. Cause the Garoppolo contract, I think, is its own discussion.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's what it comes down to. At this point, I think if you can maybe get Mac Jones at 7, I don't hate that. Although now the report is San Francisco wants Mac Jones at 3, which, okay. I love Mac Jones. I don't love him that much. But I just did this blow up their plans? Was the whole plan, the whole offseason tied to going and getting that rookie? And now Kyle Shanahan, Brian Flores have caught Bill Belichick by surprise.
I mean, there's no chance in hell that this does not change the way that the Patriots were approaching the draft. There's no chance in hell. So I guess it comes down to that. I think the question we need to ask is how many teams in that top 10 are taking a quarterback? How many teams in that top 10? It could be 5. It could be 6. Who knows? And will teams be willing to trade out of that? I don't know. One thing's for sure. It's exciting. There are so many different directions this could go in. It's impossible to guess. To me, though, again, the path of least resistance, the path of least cost, and something that will help the Patriots. And you mentioned it. They could go for the guy next year, a quarterback next year, next year's draft. When you have
Bill Djokovic, baby, let's go.
So, but honestly, when you have 6 teams that are going to be drafting a quarterback, or 5 teams, whatever it is, in this first round are going to be drafting a quarterback. Conventional wisdom would tell you that next year it's going to be less competitive to get a quarterback in the first round. That's going to be something that factors into Bill Belichick's decision making, in regard to who's going to be under center. And again, I go back to Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think you're going to have to be giving up more than maybe a 3rd, 2nd round pick to get a guy like that when you have to.
Oh, that's all too much. It should be a late 1st at best, a late 3rd at best.
And maybe it is, but quarterbacks are going for more these days. I mean, I guess you could look at Tannehill.
Don't have those massively handicapping cap hits.
There's also one more person that is
Darnold. Did you just see that? Is that what you're talking about?
I've not seen Darnold. I was going to say Deshaun Watson.
I'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, Manish Mehta just threw out there that the Jets are open to trading Sam Darnold without getting back a 1st-round pick. They won't trade him in the
He's
division.
He's not going to the Patriots. Not in the division, yeah.
The thing with Watson for me is San Francisco was at the front of that wagon. They were, if he was going anywhere, San Francisco was the most likely team. Miami was very high up on that list as well. They both took themselves out of that running, I think, with the trade that they made today. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that means for Deshaun Watson overall, but what that tells me is teams don't think this, at the very least, teams don't think this is getting sorted out anytime soon. And as long as that's the thing, and there's so many allegations here, I'm losing count. I think for the time being, at least through the draft, I don't think he's untouchable. I don't think he's touchable. I think he's a guy you just have to leave alone.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's such crazy timing. It's obviously unfortunate first and foremost for the alleged victims in this matter. But this again throws a massive wrench in this offseason, and I think that is a direct that's directly what has impacted what's gone on today.
Right. Like I don't think this move happens today if Deshaun Watson is still fully, you know, tradable. And this remember. Houston said they weren't going to trade him. So maybe, you know, who knows? But I don't think this happens today if there's still a possibility of Deshaun Watson being traded, which is why I'm telling you I think this rules out a Deshaun Watson trade at least through the summer.
So wouldn't that up a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo's value?
No, because the teams that are trading for Watson aren't trading for Garoppolo.
That's true. And maybe, yeah, the Jets won't be willing to trade for Garoppolo when they
right.
have.
If the Jets wanted Garoppolo, they'd stick with Darnold.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
The Dolphins, I mean, maybe as insurance for Tua, but they signed Brissett, who actually thinks a better option than Garoppolo. So they're fine. now you have San Francisco. They go up and get this pick, and that just leaves Denver. And those were the four teams, and maybe Denver figures out a way to get involved here. But I just think I can't help but feel like that's, you know, off the table with Watson. So
I know it sucks because didn't you and Evan Lazar just do a mock draft like yesterday?
Just did a mock draft, a live mock draft Thursday night. And I'm glad we got it in because we got to have fun with it before it wasn't a possibility. We had a problem. Maybe it's me because we have the calling it curse, right? Where stuff always breaks after we do this show. When me and Evan were doing the show, we were doing a weekly show during free agency. And Van Noy signed an hour after we got off one night. And then Andrew signed an hour we got off the next night. And I was starting to think maybe it was me, but then we were able to get our draft off. It was actually better this time that the news happened after. So we were able to get our draft off last night before this happened. And then me and you were supposed to record at 12:30 today. And I kind of got, you know, the shipping channels got backlogged a little bit. And
another tease.
Yeah, there you go. Good catch. And we weren't able to record until later. We were going to record. We would have been wrapping up. If we had recorded at 12:30, we would have been wrapping up. We would have been probably already recording for 45 minutes by the time this news came out. So we hit that well. All right. So let's talk about Garoppolo's contract, though. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to make that trade and you're the Patriots, and I think that's kind of just what they have to do at this point. It's settling a little bit, but this team can be competitive. They're built in the mold of that Niners team that went to the Super Bowl, the Titans team that got close. Just a really good all-around roster. You just need a net neutral as your quarterback. Garoppolo got to the Super Bowl that way. He did. And win, but it wasn't his fault. It was Shanahan's fault. That being said, that's all contingent on you putting pieces around him, not just this year, in the future. Again, it's a $27 million cap hit. It's just shy of 27 this year. I think it's like 26.4 this year and then 27 next year. You can't pay Jimmy Garoppolo that much if you're the Patriots. Both your corners and both your starting tackles are on franchise deals. You're going to need money to spend the next couple of years. If I'm Bill Belichick, the way I look at this is, Jimmy, you don't want to be in San Francisco, and nobody else wants you. I am saving you, Jimmy Garoppolo. I am going to rescue your career. So you're going to play for the number that I tell you you're going to play for. We're not going to talk about this $27 million. There is no negotiation. You either take my offer, or that you're done. You can go back up Zach Wilson for the next 3 years. Then good luck getting a free agency deal at age 32. That has to be the, like, I'm not, that cap hit needs to come down by at least half. That need probably closer to a third. I think you can't pay Jimmy Garoppolo more than 10, 12 million max against the cap.
Well, what do you think about the scenario of the Patriots just waiting it out and calling the 49ers bluff? Because do you think the 49ers want to pay a guy who's not a part of their future $26.4 million this year? When it's only $3 million dead money?
Yeah, so what's the dead money again?
I believe it's only $3 million. I'll double check that.
$3 million in dead money or free $3 million? Oh, no, yeah, $3 million, just under $3 million dead cap. Okay, so if they cut him, I have it right here. If they cut him after June 1st, they save $25 million. Cut or trade.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Actually cut and trade. They save more after June 1st. So even if the Patriots do make a trade, it might not be until June. Maybe you wait out them releasing him. Maybe you do. But again, if they were maybe waiting out trading up into the top 10, how'd that go? You risk, these are the options at this point. You risk losing him and that's it. I don't know that Garoppolo's better than Cam. They each have their pros and cons. But I know this. He eliminates Jared Stidham as plan B. And that, to me, is so crucial right now. I think between Cam and Garoppolo, you can get a serviceable season of quarterback play. And a serviceable season – and by the way, Cam wasn't serviceable last year. So I'm counting on him being better this year. I think he'll be slightly better. If you can get a serviceable 16 or 17, if they extend it, games out of Garoppolo and Newton, that should get you to 11 to 12 wins. 10 is the basement, I think, in a 17-game season.
So
if you have to count on Stidham for any games, I won't do that. So that's why, like, I don't know how much I want to risk losing Garoppolo.
Yeah, but also, if he's not even going to come in and be a solidified starting quarterback, like he's going to have to, you know, try out for that position essentially. Again, that cap money, it's a lot, and maybe he'd be willing to restructure.
And Evan Lazard reported this. A potential restructure is part of why Garoppolo not wanting, not necessarily a restructure, but he could have been a Patriot now. The restructure contract is part of the issue right now.
Okay. So is that something he's reporting, Evan? Or are you saying that's a potential issue?
That is a potential issue.
Okay. He's
reported that the Patriots tried to get Garoppolo and the Niners, there was a holdup.
Okay. And that was from Garoppolo's team saying, you know, if restructuring is, because he has that no trade clause, which adds another element into
right. So what I am, so Evan said they tried to get Garoppolo, there was a holdup. Okay. What I am telling you is me putting two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
The holdup probably had something to do with the restructure. Because I don't buy San Francisco not wanting to trade him. I don't buy that one bit.
No, it's playing hardball.
So I look at, well, what else could it be? If San Francisco wants to move him and the Patriots want him and they can't do it, where's the other issue? Well, the Patriots have to be able to fit him under the cap. They can't do that on his current contract.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of – and the thing is, in a weird way, not only – did San Francisco improve their position in that draft to get that next big name quarterback? They've also gained a ton of leverage.
Yes.
In regard to Jimmy Garoppolo and his trade value potentially. And just, you know, the fact that the quarterbacks are going to be gone. You're a team that needs a quarterback. Guess what? We just made a trade that's going to make it more difficult.
The problem is how many more teams need quarterbacks?
You mentioned them. It's New England. It's what, Denver?
I don't know that Denver needs a quarterback. They just because a team can upgrade a quarterback doesn't mean they need one.
But it seems like the only real team that San Francisco is trying to play with right now and trying to use that leverage against, it's one team. It's Bill Belichick. It's the New England Patriots.
Right. Because if you look at the other quarterback needy teams, Carolina has Teddy Bridgewater under contract for one more year. He's a bridge. He's fine. He is what Garoppolo would be. They would need a young long-term option. That's not Garoppolo. Denver, Drew Lock has a ton of upside. The only reason I think they're really being talked about is because they had a chance to get Deshaun Watson, and I'm the biggest Drew Lock fan on the planet. I'll move on from him in a second if I can get Deshaun Watson.
Maybe New Orleans, but they already have two guys.
Right. They have two guys and they're already paying Taysom Hill a bunch of money. And is Jimmy Garoppolo that much better of an option than Jameis Winston? I think they're kind of the same. Washington, again, Ryan Fitzpatrick or Garoppolo. It's a wash. The Patriots are really the only team. Cam is a priority backup. Cam's not a starter. If he has to start, you can start him. But like, I'm fine going into the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick as my starter. I'm fine going into the season with Teddy Bridgewater as my starter. The problem with those teams is they don't have a long-term option. I don't know that Cam is on the level of some of those guys, and they don't have a long-term option. So they're coming at it from both sides. They don't have to fill both this year. But yes, the Patriots need Jimmy Garoppolo more than any other NFL team does. Maybe if Deshaun Watson gets dealt to the Broncos, we talk about Houston. Maybe would be the only other one. But that, like I said, I don't think that happens.
It's going to be wild. It's about a month from this week, correct? Late April?
The draft?
The draft, yes.
29th of April is the first. 29th of April. The first draft.
And the reality is we might not even be done. There's so much more that's going to be going on. Yeah. So it's exciting. People always talk about the NBA free agency. I can't remember an NFL or NBA offseason. I can't remember an NFL offseason that's had, you know, this much turnover at one position, at the quarterback position, number one, and this many, you know, big high profile moves, especially here in New England. So crazy stuff. But we'll see. Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think he's staying in San Francisco. And there's only, as you mentioned, one team that seems to be a logical suitor for him. Will they be willing to pay the price? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch unfold.
Yeah, so I agree. Speaking of the NBA, by the way, because you wanted to touch on this, there's a new HBO movie coming out based on the Showtime Lakers, and there's
It's
some
a
very
series, I
interesting.
believe.
It, oh, it's just okay, a series.
Yeah.
Some very interesting casting in that one.
There is. First and foremost, there's Michael Chiklis, Andover, Massachusetts native, my hometown. He'll be playing Red Auerbach, which is an interesting one. I don't really know much that Michael Chiklis is in. I know he's in The Shield. Never saw it. I know he's in Fantastic Four, the original. I liked him as a thing. He was good in that. But I do like how they're going local on that front. But there's one other guy who's playing a big-name role, a guy from the Boston Celtics he's playing, who confuses me. I'm a huge fan of his. He's one of my favorites. But I would never, ever envision him playing Larry Bird, and that's Bo Burnham, who is slated reportedly.
I didn't even realize Bo Burnham was an actor.
Oh yeah, no, he's an actor. Well, he's more of a writer. He's a writer, director, actor, comedian. He hasn't done a lot of stand-up. He had two specials, both on Netflix, which are exceptional in my opinion. And I don't know about you. It might be different because you're a South Shore guy. I'm Merrimack Valley, border the North Shore, and he's from the North Shore. I went to St. John's Prep. But I knew about Bo Burnham when I was like 11 or 12 years old, and he was viral on YouTube. And so I've been a fan of his for legitimately most of my life. And even though he's only like 5 years older than me, but he is a genius. He's brilliant. And so anything that he's involved in, I'm automatically interested in. That's kind of just how I feel about the guy. But he's always acted. He's theatric. He's an artist. He even in his stand-up specials, he's acting there too. So he's been in a few things. But this is definitely, even as someone who does do acting a little bit, this seems just off the beaten path. And I don't think this is a comedy show. It's like a
this is like a real serious thing.
A docudrama type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it though. It's sports related and Bo Burnham's in it. And I'm more curious about him playing Larry Bird than anything else. I do wonder, will he grow out the mustache?
I would think so. Well, I mean, yes, because I think it's late 80s. And late 80s, Larry Bird had that mustache, no?
Yeah. I don't think it was an early career thing. I think it was late 80s, early 90s even. He was all about the mustache. But it's going to be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. All right. There's one other thing we got to talk about here. Because it has been my favorite thing all week, is Ledwidge, you somehow hadn't seen this.
It crossed through my timeline. I hadn't read up on it.
You didn't realize the extent. So
I thought it was just a random picture for the most part.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, and we're pushing an hour, right? You have the record time there. Like, how much time do we have to bullshit about this?
We're probably at about 50 minutes or so.
All right, so we won't do a ton on this, but for those of you who don't know world geography, the Suez Canal is a canal in Africa or Asia, technically, or it might be both.
No, it's Africa. It's Egypt.
It is in Africa. It might be a dividing line between Africa and Asia, right?
It is. It borders. So the two territories, you have the Sinai Peninsula to the east, and then you have Egypt to the west.
Well, Sinai Peninsula is part of Egypt, right?
It is a part of Egypt, but not until like I think as recently as like the 60s or 70s. So it was originally a part of I think it was fought between Israel and Egypt for a while. And then Israel gave it to Egypt as a peace offering a while back. Well, so either way, I can look it up while you.
Okay. It's not important. So people know where it is. It's by the pyramids. Anyway, it is the only way. It's a very important. It's the busiest shipping channel in the world. It's if you're going from the Pacific, specifically like, you know, the South Pacific around India or Eastern Africa, like that is the only way to get to the Mediterranean without going all the way around Africa. Saves like 7 days off the trip, or it usually does. Until I think it was on Tuesday, a ship got stuck in the Suez Canal. There's just a massive container ship. It's the biggest, tied for the biggest in the world. Just right across the canal. And there's obviously serious elements to this. Billions of dollars a day in financial impact. And you've got people stuck on ships now all around. Because like these ships, they can't... Some of them turned around and went all the way around Africa. But that... Now you're on the ship 10 days longer than you thought you would. You only packed for the trip being so long. And then if you didn't do that, you're just kind of out there waiting in the water for this to clear up to go through. So obviously, you know, everybody's stuck out there, but it's just it like the first thing that came up is the scene from Austin Powers, right? Where he gets the cart stuck in the hallway.
Yeah.
And it's and then they bring in this and his ship is huge. It's like the size of the Empire State Building is what they're saying. And they bring in this little dinky excavator to try to like dig it out. And it was just because it was the day they did that, the day the NBA trade deadline. And it was where you talked about how the Celtics had all these needs that they just couldn't fix. And it was just the perfect analogy for it.
It's like, what they did with that excavator, it's like trying to put out a wildfire by pissing on it. Like, it really was perfect for the meme template. It was amazing.
And we're going to see that forever. But so you had some ideas before we came on about what to do about the ship that's stuck in the Suez Canal?
Yes. In my non-expert opinion, I had a couple, I guess you can call them Neanderthal brain ideas.
Okay.
One is you put barriers on both sides of the ship, on either side, so that you lock it in place. Then you just get like a few tons of water and you just dump it in so that the ship will float again. It seems like the problem is it's very shallow, so it's stuck in the mud. So the weight of the ship is pretty much overriding whatever the buoyancy is, I guess. That's one of them. Second idea, take all the cargo off, which will lighten the load, make the ship more buoyant. Again, I'm not an expert at all.
Well, so I just – my thing with – I don't think that one in theory wouldn't work. But you see, it's not like the ship's near a port or anything. It's in the middle of the desert, and there's got to be – hundreds of containers on there, if not maybe thousands. I don't know how many containers fit on these ships. Like, yeah, how long is that going to take to get them off? And how are you going to do it? You need equipment for that.
Yeah, I bet they could find a way. I mean, they could probably. You don't think any of that equipment's portable?
Isn't it like those big cranes?
They are big cranes. You're right.
Like on tracks. Yeah.
Oh, you're right. So it's like in Call of Duty. Now that you mention it. Yeah, you're right. It's huge. It's big equipment. I feel like they can make that.
The other thing is, what's on there? So, like, I saw something that they're now saying that there's going to be another toilet paper shortage.
Oh, God. Yeah, I've been meaning to invest in a bidet. I feel like those things are the future. But hopefully not. I didn't mean to say that. I don't think there's going to be an issue here. This is also this can't be a problem that affects the United States. This is something that must affect.
No, it can because it's global. It's global shipping.
It is, but this ship is probably it's either coming from
it's coming from China.
It's coming from China, so it went all the way. Yeah, but if we were the beneficiaries of that shipment, China would have just gone across the Pacific. They wouldn't have gone.
Would
through.
They? But if it's going to like New York. Although it was going to Holland. They said it was going to Holland.
It's going to Holland. If it was going to New York, though, you would just ship it to the West Coast.
The U.S. maybe isn't affected by that ship, the Ever Given, right?
Yeah.
But who's to say the ship behind it doesn't have a bunch of stuff that – who's to say the ship behind it wasn't going from, India to New York, right? Who's to – like all of the ships. It's not that one ship. It's every single ship going through there. And they said it's thousands of ships. That are backed up.
How much money did you say they're wasting every day with this thing?
It's in the billions. And because the gas prices are going to go up. Because you have, it's that part of the world. You're going to have a lot of oil tankers.
And another surprising thing to me with this whole thing is when you say billions of dollars are going to be wasted because of this, and you look at actual.
I don't think wasted is the right term. They said it's billions of dollars that are tied up. Maybe if there's food on some of these ships, like that gets lost. Some of it might not be lost. It's just
it'll
gonna
be delayed.
Price spike.
But either way, like the fact that it's that much volume worth of stuff, and you look at the pictures of this canal, it's a massive ship, but that canal is tiny.
It's worked for hundreds of years.
It has, which makes me surprised that this hasn't happened to this extent in the past. You did tell me that there have been ships that get caught. They're just not nearly as big, and they can get them out. But you think that they would figure like, no, this could eventually be a major problem for us, especially when you have ships with that much cargo that are that big. It just surprises me that when there's so much riding on that tiny on that passageway, they wouldn't, maybe widen a canal a little bit. They widen streets all the time for dumb reasons. You can't ride in a canal, you know, well, maybe 20 feet in each direction.
That's also what makes it so wild to me, is that where this happened, it's straight. Like, it's not like they were turning and they overturned. Like, it was straight. It had been straight. It was staying straight. And the guy just took a right turn. And apparently, like, the power went out on the ship, and there's obviously nothing you can do about that. But, you know, the one spot where you kind of have to turn, if you look on the map, there's like two parts of the canal, and in the middle they open up in like a big lake. So there's like more room for the maneuvering in there, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Yeah, at least, at the very least, I think it's a good thing that it wasn't the captain's fault. Because imagine how much of a dick you'd feel like.
We don't know.
It might be. It's a good point.
The movie's going to be really good.
Oh my God. It's going to be Captain Phillips 2.0. I guess
it wouldn't be. So that's the thing. It is that part of the world. You have all these ships down there just stuck out in the water, and they're worried about what's going to happen. Oh, it's a little more than that, but.
It's different. I guess they're. I don't think they're a pirate. I think pirates are more of a Somali thing.
Well, Somalia is not like. Yeah, it's pretty far. I don't know. But who knows how far backed up some of these ships are.
Hey, it could be all the way down there. It's crazy. Well, that's another factor when you're talking about having to go all the way around Africa.
Right.
You know, maybe that's going to be an issue. Although I haven't read anything on pirates being as big of a problem as it was like 10 years ago. So maybe
it's more than pirates. Like, you go down, like, people think of like Africa as like desert and maybe like jungle, but like warm, right? Tropical, whatever climate. I don't know climates. But like South Africa, when you got to go down around the end, that's south. That's like you're not that far from Antarctica. Like, I can't imagine that the water is very calm down there. As calm as it would be going through the Mediterranean Sea, anyway.
I think down there you're fine. I think like if you're going around South America, that's where
that,
like,
one I know is really bad.
Southern, like, yeah, like Chile. You're in southern Chile. Like, oh yeah, it's colder there than it is anywhere in the United States. I would think, at least being that far south. I don't think that's an issue in South Africa. I think South Africa is pretty warm. Think about where Australia is. You know, that's always warm, right?
Yeah, it actually is about the same as I've been looking at a map this whole time. It is about the same. I don't know. I feel like when you get down there, it probably gets pretty bumpy, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm not a seafaring man. Although it is very appropriate, Lebowitz. I just thought of this. Mm-hmm. Remember what the huge thing, the first big meme was of 2021?
The first big meme. I mean, they
whatever it's called, the big online thing, whatever he was into at the beginning of the year.
What was that?
Sea shanties.
Oh.
So now you got all the shanties. You're out on the boat. You're stuck. You know, if you're on that boat, maybe you're a little more, you know, involved. But if you're not on that boat and you're on one of the other boats that just stuck there, maybe it's time we bring sea shanties back. They need something to do.
Well, sea shanties, I feel like the main inspiration for sea shanties was adversity, right? It's dealing with adversity. That's what inspires music.
Well, I thought it was just to kill time at sea.
It's that too, but there's, you know, people who are trying to make a living, get by, you know, living in tough times and all that. Because you're talking about these sea shanties stem back hundreds of years. I feel like everybody had it tough back then. Now there's a little bit more adversity for these sailors. So maybe this will create a new boom in sea shanties, in which case maybe this is all worth it.
That'd be nice. So we'll see. Again, I you know, we joke about it. There's obviously serious implications, but it's hard to not, you know, in 2020, everything was just bad, right? It was just, it was bad, and there was no way around it, and it was just bad. At least now there's like a little bit of like, hey, look at this tiny excavator next to this big ship. So, all right, we got to be well over an hour, right?
I believe we are, yes.
All right, so we will wrap it up there. We'll be back next week. Plenty more show for you. Follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.